Hello and welcome, my friend, to the Minnesota Gardening Podcast. It is my absolute honor to have you here as we guide you on feeding pollinators, eliminating chemicals, and saving water at your home landscape. So today, one of the big things that we are going to be talking about with the extraordinary author, Kathy Reese, is about winter interest. And so I have a firm believer in making sure that our landscapes are 365 days of the year accessible and usable and fun to be around in your homes. And so you need to have winter interest in your landscapes and places to observe it. And so today we go and take a deep dive again with author Kathy Reese on winter interest. And her new book just recently came out. It's called Winterland. And so it's just an awesome book with lots of really beautiful, extraordinary photographs and great ideas as to how you can add winter interest to your landscape. Enjoy. All right. Welcome everyone to the Minnesota Gardening Podcast today. Today we have just an incredible author, and she's actually from Maine, but we're going to talk about things that are very, very similar in what we have going on here in Minnesota. It's a book called Winterland, Create a Beautiful Garden for Every Season. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous book that I highly recommend everybody to pick up. And so today we have Kathy Reese here with us to talk about winter interest. Kathy, so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, Kat, so will you, first before we get too far into it, will you introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about what you do in the gardening world?
Okay. I moved to Maine about 28 years ago. And when I got here, I was finishing a master's degree in ecology after I got a bachelor's in environmental design from the University of Wisconsin in Green Bay. So I'm familiar with your neck of the woods.
For sure.
And since living in Maine, I've been doing a lot of ecological consulting and gardening, both sides. So sometimes I'm doing more of one and less of the other, and other times, you know, vice versa. So in the last 28 years, I've just been doing a lot of gardening here along the coast of Maine, which has kind of some difficult conditions. It's milder than a lot of areas, which makes it seem like, oh, you could grow anything. But we have a really rough winter and spring with a lot of freezing, thawing cycles that are pretty hard on plants. So I was kind of amazed at the fact that the flora is so similar with Wisconsin and many other, this whole like northern stretch kind of from Minnesota over to Maine. We have a lot of similarities in what's going on. Our weather is, like I said, it's similar, except that we do have a lot more mild stretches where suddenly we're getting 4 inches of snow and then you just grab your cross country skis and suddenly it turns to rain and you're like, no. So it's tough on the plants as well. But we have here on the coast, we have a lot of conifers. So there's a lot of spruce fir in addition to your basic hardwoods. The white pine is a big, big one. It's our state tree here in Maine.
Right.
So yeah, I've been just maintaining gardens, building gardens, designing gardens, doing sort of all that garden stuff in the last many years. And I really enjoy being outdoors and having my hands in the dirt and really getting in touch with nature. I mean,
right.
Really, like what? It's like the greatest job you can imagine, being outside all summer long, listening
exactly.
to birds and observing plants. It's just great.
Wonderful. Yeah. And so as you are working outside and working with designing gardens and things like that, I feel like a lot of folks often just neglect the winter months as they're thinking. Here in Minnesota, we've got a solid, you know, 5 months of winter and dormant season and that kind of thing. And people just, they oftentimes we're doing a really good job lately of teaching people that they don't need to cut things back. They can let it go and let it stay for winter. They don't need to do fall cleanups per se and those kinds of things. They can leave things in the garden. And, but there's a step before that, just on the before the maintenance side is the design side as to making sure that you have the elements in place for winter gardening, making sure you're able to see things. So why first do you think that winter gardens get neglected?
Boy, it's a mystery to me too, to tell you the truth. I started thinking about it, and here We have what I call it 7 months of winter, because really our leaves start falling mid-October and they don't start coming back till like mid to the end of May. So that's the 7 solid months of like the deciduous trees being missing their leaves, which is a super long time. I think it's because maybe gardening history is more about flowers, and many things don't flower during these months. There's only a couple things that I can think of, like the witch hazel, which is like our awesome winter bloomer, just getting finished about now. But, you know, just because gardens are, most people think of gardens as being more about flowers. I think of gardens as being like outside spaces that we can use. So it seems like by that definition, they should have a lot of value for the wintertime, both to be used by being out there and also to be viewed from inside. Because realistically, we're spending a lot more time inside in the winter.
Right, exactly. And I think that one of your hats that you wear is native plant world and that kind of thing. And I think that native plants really do help add to winter landscapes, because a lot of them have sturdier stems and a lot of grasses that flow and change in the wind. So what, if you could take us through, like, what are, actually, I'll go back to your book. So your book is set up in a really cool way, I thought, for how it handles winter interest and making sure that people are focusing on things. And so your part one is around design, part two is around contrast, part three is around embellishments, four is care, and five is sharing things. And so you go through in the book like these very definitive pieces on things. And I'd like to walk through them today with you for how that works in reality and practicality as people can utilize those. So let's talk about design and just a couple of the elements that are, what do you think are the most important design elements that people need to be thinking about as they're focusing on a winter garden?
Well, I think that the design elements for winter are pretty much the same as any other time of year. The thing is, you can get away with not having very good design in the summer when everything's blooming and there's foliage everywhere and everything's full and lush. You don't have to be thinking so hard about placement of things and rhythm and texture and contrast. So I think those things just become a lot more pronounced in the winter, and your choice of where you have, especially your woodies, the things that are going to stay standing through the winter, the trees and shrubs, and of course some of those really hardy perennials that can stand throughout the winter, you know, really thinking about, you know, how are those plants going to survive the winter and survive it looking good too. And in the book, I don't really talk so much about giving exact plant recommendations, because I realize that every site is so different. Maybe you have, you know, you're exposed to the prevailing winds, and things that stay standing and looking good in one garden are just not going to look good in your garden through the whole winter. So you might need to devise different tactics. So basically trying to use your basic design elements, but thinking about the structure of the garden and kind of erase all those flowers from your thoughts when you're designing for the winter, because they're really not going to be there. And really now is the best time to really start thinking about it, because we're looking at it. And this is the time when you can really start making some plans, you know, for when you need to supplement a view out a window, or create a better pathway to the compost pile. And you can get away with a lot in the summer, but in the winter, when it's treacherous and icy, you know, you really have to think a little harder to make it easier to use those outdoor spaces. So, I mean, now is really the time and to be thinking about that design and making some plans and trying to stick with the plan in the summer when, you know, you get to the nursery and all those trays of impatience are out there looking all happy, and you've been through 7 months of winter and you get distracted. So make your plans now. Do your research now. This is like the best kind of armchair gardening You know, you can be looking out your window. There you are with your plant catalogs. You can be looking up those trees and shrubs to see how tall and wide they get and if they're hardy in your zone. They like sun or wet or whatever, and try to figure out how to really improve on the views that you currently have and your access to the different garden elements so that you can be happy and safe outside, spending more time during these more difficult months.
Yeah, exactly. And so you talk on the design side of things. One of the pieces, the words that you just used was rhythm. And I really love the word rhythm in the garden. Can you talk about that a little bit and how that translates into utilizing rhythm for winter interest?
Well, again, so we're talking about a different plant palette for rhythm. So rhythm is really about sort of repeating elements throughout the garden, which both ties things together and then sort of creates this kind of rhythm by drawing your eye through the garden. So by choosing certain plants that have either or a combination of plants that have a particular look, either on their own or together. And just as music is repeating certain bars or phrases, you can do the same thing with plants in the garden, and it creates a kind of familiar backdrop, maybe in front of which different things happen at different moments in time. So during the summer, you're going to be having the flowers and other things happening in front or behind this kind of backbone that forms this shape and repeating rhythm of elements. So different kinds of shrubs are great for this. And small trees as well that have different shapes, like a conical shaped conifer is very pointy and maybe very different from rounded shaped shrubs. So having sort of combinations that you like and then repeating those throughout can add a nice flow to the whole garden and make sure that those are things that you like the look of in the off season.
Yeah, for sure. And so that leads us perfectly into the next part of your book, which is the contrast side of things. Can you talk about contrast and why how people can pull that off in their winter garden?
Well, a lot of it is just the natural contrast that occurs in the winter. When the sun is low, it's really radiating much differently throughout the garden, and the look of shadows, the relationship between shadow and light is quite different and quite dramatic in the winter. So trying to use those shadows as an element in the garden, you know, in the summer, again, the sun is high overhead. It's shining straight down. Things are not casting those long, interesting shadows. So one photo that I remember taking in the book was of a picket fence in the snow. And just the way the light was shining across that picket fence cast this, you know, dark and light shadow. Well, the dark shadows on the snow, it just looks so dramatic. It seems like any kind of fence structure plant is going to do the same thing. And you would have these really bright contrasts between the light and the dark and the sun and the shadow. Some of the other contrasting elements I talk about is just one that I really like is the contrast between the wild and the cultivated. Everybody has this to some extent, unless just your whole yard is completely cultivated. I like to have a little bit of the wild always in my garden designs and around my house for sure. The cultivated is sort of the place that we are really trying to make sense out of nature somehow. We're trying to arrange nature in a certain way that meets with our expectations and our aesthetic. And we can understand a more simplified version of nature better than the actual wild nature. So I think it's comforting to have that around the house and the areas that we are moving through, but having some elements of the wild brought in can be really important. And also give us a little humility as gardeners. You know, we can't control everything. And that's part of the beauty of gardening, that unexpected things are always going to be happening. And we should really be trying to embrace those unexpected things, whether they be, you know, something growing much bigger than we thought, or something not growing very well at all, or just the way two plants that you didn't really know very well kind of create a dance when they grow, they get mature next to each other.
Right.
And how wonderful that can be.
And one really important thing, especially in this contrast side of things, I think is one of my favorites is like multi-stemmed ornamental trees and making sure that you are maintaining them well so you can see that structure of that. Like I've got a planted it before I got obsessed with native plants, but we have a magnolia, a Leonard Messel magnolia in our front yard, and it's just gorgeous, and it's got really great structure to it. Can you talk about the importance of making sure that the importance of having those types of height elements and different things in a winter garden?
Yeah, you know, I feel like a lawn is about as unexciting as can be. I mean, it has a little appeal in that sort of like blank white canvas kind of way.
Exactly.
But having a variety of shapes and sizes can just add so much more when the leaves are missing. Every shrub, like the magnolia particularly, has its own unique structure. Sometimes the same plant will have different types of structure depending on where it's growing or how it's been pruned. Like a birch tree, for example, you can have a single stem or you can have a multiple stem tree. So by pruning and by nurturing a certain plant, we can get different kinds of structures and shapes. And then by combining different woodies, particularly to a scene, we can create different kinds of feelings. Are they mounded and soft? Are they tall and spiky? Are they like umbrella shaped, shading something below it? I like to think of it kind of like a puzzle, like where the plants kind of fit together and, you know, create a kind of mosaic of shapes, textures, sizes. And that gives you a lot to look at during the winter with, even though right. There aren't any flowers or there aren't any leaves. I find the structure very interesting. I just enjoy looking at like the winterberry, and when the leaves are gone, you see the berries and they just highlight those stems, and it just looks so fabulous, and right. All the branching patterns. And I guess since I studied botany, I'm always looking at like, oh, does it have opposite or alternate branching right. patterns and things like that. So yeah, there's always stuff to look at.
For sure. And winterberry is native in Minnesota. So that's a really great thing too. So Kathy, I have talked too much. So we're going to skip across a couple different things because we're running up against the end of our time here. But you got two great parts that we're going to make sure that people read when they buy your book. So Embellish and Care. And I'll make sure that the link to the book is in the show notes so people can go to Minnesota Gardening and find that there. So minnesotagardening.com. But one that I want to end on is the sharing side of things and how important that sharing piece is with gardening. And it was an unexpected, to me at least, it was an unexpected part of the book. And it was wonderful and perfect and a great way to end it, which is where we're going to do this podcast. But can you talk about why sharing, especially in the winter garden, is so unexpected and important?
Well, I'll start with like the sharing with your human friends first. So I guess I learned a big lesson during those COVID years. I was working on the book at the time, and I decided, oh, I need to build a fire pit because I want to photograph it for the book. Of course, there's only one tiny photo of it in there, but I spent the whole winter, every like time there was a thaw, I'd be working on it, and I got the thing done. This was like the winter of 2020, and then like COVID hit. And the value of having a place to go outdoors with friends, already set up, always set up, was just a lifesaver for me. And so I highly recommend creating a space that you can use with your human friends, both in the summer and in the winter outdoors. It's perfect. Okay, then the second half of this, which is a much bigger half, is sharing your garden with all of the other creatures that live out there. So everything from the bacteria and fungi that are breaking down the leaves that you're putting on your garden as mulch, all the way up to like the deer and the occasional black bear that amble in through the yard, and how to really both protect your plants from animals that might be doing harm, but in a kind way, in a way that still welcomes those animals into your yard. I mean, don't we all just love seeing wildlife in our yards, whether it's a squirrel or a bird or a moose or a bear? We have them all here. So I think just thinking about your garden as a resource, not just for you and your friends, but for all the other organisms out there, you know, big and small. And I think, you know, just coming to the realization that we don't really know very much about how the rest of the world works out there with all those other creatures, and trying to do our best to make homes for them and keep the soil healthy. And then we get that wonderful joy of seeing a bird that's eating those winter berries or those bayberries or eating those seeds that are left on the asters that you left standing in November instead of cutting them down.
Perfect. Well, that was just a wonderful way to end, and just a great, great message, especially as we're in the holiday season here. So I really appreciate, Kathy, your time being here and you sharing just all of your knowledge and your wonderful photos in the book, and just how that all came together. So I highly recommend everybody getting Winterland. So today we've had Kathy Reese here with us today. Kathy, was there anything that I didn't ask you about that I should have asked you about to end this today?
No, I think we covered it. I just want to encourage people to just get out there every time of the year and get to know the plants, get to know the animals and the insects and the creatures that are spending time in your garden. And that in itself is just so fulfilling and rewarding. That's all I wanted to say, I guess.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for being here. Again, I really, really appreciate it. I encourage everybody to grab your book. They can find it at minnesotagardening.com. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
See what I mean? Kathy was just an extraordinary asset and wonderful, wonderful to talk with. She was just such a kind human being in having this podcast with us, and just really great wealth of knowledge on winter interests in your landscapes. And there was, as we talked about a little bit, there was really a shortage of winter interest type books in the world. And so I'm really glad that she tackled this subject and took some great pictures to just share how awesome this can be in your landscape, and ideas as to how you can do that. So you can see some of the photos and also purchase the book at minnesotagardening.com in the show notes of the podcast. So just search for Winterland and you will find that book come up front and center. So with that, I hope you have an absolutely wonderful rest of your day, and I will see you again next week. Thanks.